I should note Justices Kelch and Funk are recused in this matter. Mr. Werner, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent Marsha Harding in this matter, formerly married to Darren Redden. Marsha Harding brought this action on behalf of her child, Justin Gress, who was born in 2000. He will be 17 in 2017. Marsha Harding was formerly married to Darren Gress, who brought into the marriage two children, Jacob and Brittany. They had Justin together, and while we would like all marriages perhaps to go on forever, at least during her lifetime, this did not. But one thing that Marsha and Darren agreed upon was the need for a college education for Justin. And by agreement during dissolution proceedings, they agreed that Justin's savings account be given to him at least by the time that he reached the age of maturity and used for his college education. They also further agreed that each of them would pay half of the college expenses, including tuition, books, housing, and other expenses of Justin. Unfortunately, in May of 2015, Darren Gress tragically lost his life. Estate proceedings were begun, and a claim was filed for the educational expenses. That claim, admittedly, is unliquidated. We don't know the amount, although we know the right. It was contingent on Justin going to college, and it was not due at that time. However, it was filed pursuant to a law of the Uniform Probate Code that requires the filing of such claims. Requires the filing of claims that are due or not due, contingent or not contingent, not dependent on a future event, and liquidated or not liquidated where we don't know the amount. This was one of those claims. And the law says that if we don't file this claim, and the case law supports, if we don't file this claim, we are barred from going after. And so we filed a claim. And it was disallowed by the personal representatives of this estate. In response, we filed a petition for allowance in the district court, as we are entitled to do, under the probate code.
Assuming you're correct in that this is an unliquidated claim and you should have filed it, what is the basis that you would use to recover? I assume even unliquidated claims, the administrator could have rejected it.
Yes, and the statute provides for our petition for allowance. However, the statute goes further than that as to unliquidated and contingent claims in 30.492 of the probate code in the state of Nebraska. It provides a remedy for those claims. The court can create a trust. The court can require a bond for the payment of those claims that are not yet known as to amount or are not yet due.
Let me ask it in a different way. So why would your claim be valid? What is the horse you are riding on?
Well, the horse is that it was a court order. And it was a court order for the payment of money in a dissolution proceeding, which was a lien on Mr. Gress's property.
Wait, is it a judgment as it is?
I'm sorry?
Is it a judgment? Is the divorce decree a judgment?
Yes, it is. And under 42.371, it becomes a lien. Aside from that, you also have the provisions giving us a right to file this under the Uniform Probate Code of the state of Nebraska, and to have the remedy as shown by Section 2492 of the Probate Code.
Why would it survive? Why would whatever you got in the divorce survive the death of the
parent? Very good question.
Parent.
This was by agreement, and there is nothing in the agreement that measures it based upon the life of either party to the dissolution. The measuring stick for when it's due is when Justin Gress goes to college. It's not governed by the life of... there are things in dissolution proceedings, obviously, that are governed by the life of the obligor. For instance, alimony is often said, and in the court records of alimony, generally it's said, if the obligor dies, there's no further responsibility. There is nothing in the court order, there is nothing in the agreement that talks about this ending upon the death of either of the parties.
Are you taking the position that this aspirational agreement contained within the dissolution judgment is a separate judgment that could be pursued?
Separate judgment.
Judgment, right, with respect to the education issue.
It is separate from other parts of the decree, yes.
Are you claiming it's a separate judgment in the conventional sense of a judgment, in an amount certain that could be registered and chased down and so forth?
It's a contract. It was agreed to between the parties.
So it's a contract.
Absolutely.
Is it the same as child support?
Excuse me?
Is it the same as child support?
I would say that child support could be enforced in an estate. However, we did not pursue that.
Have we ever said that child support ordered in a dissolution decree survives death?
Isn't there a statute that says exactly that? That the child support ordered in a decree does survive death.
I think it does survive death.
But that really goes to, I think the heart of this is, what was this provision? Was it child support or was it something different?
It is in the nature of child support. However, it is not just child support.
Didn't it go beyond the minority of the child? I mean, wasn't it expected that the child would go to college after he reached the age of majority, or at least finish college after he reached the age of majority?
I would certainly expect so. As I say, it could be deemed a contract, but it was certainly court order, and it certainly supports the child, and it was done by agreement between the parties.
Did the deceased make provision in his estate for the payment to Justin for his college expenses?
He indicated in a trust that was created pursuant to his will that he desired the college expenses to be paid.
So hasn't he met his obligation there, and that Justin can enforce that obligation if the trustee does not pay for the expenses?
Unfortunately not.
Why not?
Because under the Hansen case, this is a discretionary trust. This trust provided specifically that the trustees have the discretion and sole discretion to provide for the health, education, maintenance, and support. And under the Hansen case, that cannot result in a cause of action because you're attacking the discretionary nature of the trust, which you cannot do. So, I feel that the court was wrong in saying that the trustee was obligated to use the funds for that purpose, because the trustee even had the right to sprinkle among the children as they decided. and as their needs might show. So, and the court also said that he receives a third. Well, not necessarily. Well, and the point is the claims are decided before dispositions of benefits.
But you're not, isn't the court's finding with regard to the trust valid if it is not appealed from?
Is the trust valid?
The court's finding with regard to the obligation of the trust to pay Justin's college expense, isn't that a judicial decision that would be binding on the parties unless the parties appeal from that finding?
If the court would say that, I would be pleased to.
Well, pick. I mean, that's a window there, isn't it? Has the appellee cross-appealed that finding?
No.
Was the trustee a party to this case?
Yes, they are the personal representatives have not distributed the property to the trustee at the time that this case was filed, so that the persons that held the assets of the estate and made the decision to disallow the claim were the personal representatives. They are the parties to this case. They happen to be the same persons. Anyway.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ms. Burkholder, good morning to you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Sherry Burkholder and I represent the appellees, Janice and Frederick Gress. This is an appeal by the former spouse of the decedent from a district court order dismissing the case that she filed against the co-personal representatives of the estate. The spouse is essentially asking the court to order that the estate pay her for college expenses that her son, the decedent and her son might incur in the future. If he decides to go to college.
Did the district court judge say that the claim wasn't ripe?
Yes. And the district court correctly found.
Was that accurate?
Yes. It's correct that significant future facts and events would need to occur to give rise to a legal dispute.
Isn't it an unliquidated claim, and wouldn't that claim have to be filed? Isn't the claim itself is ripe, isn't it?
The claim is not right because this court has repeatedly held that in order for a case in controversy to exist, that there should be no further factual development necessary to clarify a concrete legal dispute susceptible to judicial relief.
Well, wouldn't, had they not filed the petition for allowance of claim, wouldn't the statutory bar of the probate statutes would that not have prevented it from ever being raised in the future?
As far as a claim against the estate, that's correct.
Or the derivatives, the distributees of the estate would be protected by that bar, wouldn't they?
The distributees of the trust will be receiving trust
assets. The trustees would be the distributees of the probate estate.
Yes.
And wouldn't the trustees be the beneficiaries of the probate bar had not this petition for allowance of claim been pursued?
Yes. They will receive the assets in order to distribute pursuant to the terms of the trust if this is not pursued or if this court affirms the decision of the district court.
So if Mr. Werner's client had not pursued this and the child ultimately attempted to enforce the right that the district judge says may exist in the future, the distributees would be in a position to assert the bar of the statute in the probate statute, correct?
Well, You're assuming a couple of things, and that would be future facts that we don't know, which is why this claim is not right. For example, the right isn't Justin's right in the decree. The right in the decree is if future facts developed and if Marcia paid college expenses on behalf of the minor child and the decedent did not pay in the future, then arguably she could file an action in the divorce case against him. But again, this court in Holdridge Co-op v. Wilson, quoting 30-2464, stated that a personal representative has the same standing to sue or be sued as the decedent had immediately prior to his death. Well, had Ms. Herring sued the decedent immediately prior to death, the court would have immediately dismissed that case because it wasn't ripe. She is not owed any money. She hasn't expended any money. She hasn't used the college savings account on behalf of the child to determine that.
If the decedent had immediately before he died repudiated the agreement, wouldn't that have provided standing?
No, because in order for her to have damages...
Well, let's take the decedent out of the question. Assume you've got exactly what this agreement said. The two parties are going to pay equally these amounts. And years later, husband writes the wife a letter saying, I'm not going to pay anything ever in the future. Go away. Wouldn't that develop a claim that could be filed at that point in time, even though the amount was not yet determined?
No. And that is because in order for her to be successful in receiving any money personally, she would have to expend her half and his half and show that she had been damaged.
In my example, wouldn't the statute of limitations on a future claim begin to run upon the unequivocal repudiation of the agreement?
I'm not sure to the answer to your question, except that in family law, generally speaking, in order to assert a claim within a divorce decree, you have to show that you have actually been damaged, that you were entitled to some sort of a judgment. And there's no funds, there's no evidence, there's no facts that would support that his former spouse is entitled to money.
You're importing that family law notion into probate in this case.
And
the clock ticks in probate to make your claims.
Exactly, Your Honor. And I agree that there's a concern about him possibly attending college in the future and his college savings possibly not being sufficient, and the former spouse, the appellant in this case, possibly having to expend some of her own funds on college expenses. But again, we do not have the factual development that makes this right for the court to decide. And that's
let's do a hypothetical. Let's assume that the district court judge was wrong when she said the claim was not right. And let's assume that this claim, if there is a claim, needed to be filed at this point in time. What should this court do then?
Determine that basically the statute, as indicated by the appellant, indicates that the court has the option of putting up some sort of constructive trust. However, the elements for constructive trust were not pled in the complaint. No facts that would support the imposition of constructive trust were pled, because essentially for a constructive trust you have to show that the person holding title is experiencing unjust enrichment to the disadvantage of the former spouse, and that's not happening. Because the trustee or the personal representative would be transferring the funds to the trustee for the very same purpose, which is for the health, education, and welfare of the children.
What is the effect of the trial court's statement that there is already a trust in existence with the obligation to pay Justin's college expenses, and therefore there is no reason to create a constructive trust to do the exact same thing that the mother requests.
That's correct. The trustees have a fiduciary duty to pay for the health, education, and welfare of the children under the terms of Darren Gress' trust and last testamentary trust.
You're not contesting that finding, then?
But it's discretionary, isn't it?
It is discretionary in that the trustee can use those funds for the health, education, and welfare of the child.
Was that issue in front of the court? Or was that a kind of dicta?
That issue was not before the court. The trustees were not parties to the lawsuit. And so, but it's correct based upon the trust that's attached to the complaint, which is part of the record.
Can you help me recall the statute that was changed to make child support at judgments survive against?
I believe that it's 42371, but I could be wrong about that.
And does it pertain to arrears?
Yes. And child support is a judgment. And a child support is, we have all the facts in front of us that can support that child support is a proper claim. Child support
that continues after the death of one of the obligees?
Yes.
Yeah, the one I'm thinking about had to do with future installments that hadn't yet accrued as of the date of death, and in essence said those are enforceable. You think that's 42371?
I'm not going to say because I might be incorrect about that, but that is correct.
Is this the equivalent of child support?
I'm sorry.
Is this the equivalent of child support?
No, Your Honor, it is not. Child support in 42371 is a judgment similar to alimony or an equity judgment that states that it's a judgment that's enforceable, that property can't be transferred.
Is there an enforceable judgment here?
It is not an enforceable judgment in the sense of...
Because it doesn't survive the death. It doesn't survive the death of the husband, right? The obligation under the divorce decree to pay college expenses does not survive the death of the husband or the obligor.
It does not survive in the sense that it's a judgment. Right, I agree.
Well, if it isn't a judgment or an obligation, it can't be enforced then after the death of the husband. The court really didn't address that, did it?
No.
It just said, you got a claim here, but it's not ripe. Therefore, I'm not going to consider it. And besides that, there is a trust there that is obligated to pay his expenses, and Justin can bring an action against the trustee if they don't pay those expenses, despite the fact that the trustees weren't even a party to the case.
Right, correct.
Counsel, do you believe the provisions of the divorce decree, as they regard payment of college expenses once the child reaches the age of majority, do you believe those provisions in the decree are enforceable? With or without regard to whether one of the spouses dies?
Yes. And it's enforceable based upon future factual development that would have to occur, assuming that the decedent was alive at that time. And that's why I urge the court to go back to 30-2464 and Holdridge Co-op versus Wilson, and go back to, there is no claim unless there was a claim against the decedent immediately prior to his death, and there was no claim against him.
Well, he was ordered to do something prospectively that may or may not ever happen.
Exactly.
And it cannot be the law, can it, that the bar of the claims statute would prevent that obligation from being enforced in the future?
No, I believe that the right would still exist for the proper party to assert a claim in the divorce action against whoever might be holding the property at that time.
And isn't that really what all the other side could be desiring to have determined in this case?
No. The plaintiff has asked that she be awarded a claim for funds that don't even exist. There's not even damages.
Okay. So you in essence are conceding that this obligation, which was included in the divorce decree, survives the probate proceeding, but at this point it's still not ripe, is your position?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there any time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. The court, therefore, is adjourned, and you are excused.